From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. George Floyd's visitation happens today in Houston. His burial will be there tomorrow. More protests, most of them peaceful, but bigger, are expected today across the country and beyond. And city, state, and national leaders are taking on big questions. Should police practices like the sleeper hold be ended or suspended? Can a police department be defunded or disbanded with public safety still intact? And should charges be filed in old cases that were never resolved? Some of these answers will take time. Some answers are coming quickly. Sacramento ended its curfew and reassigned the National Guard troops after an emergency city council meeting Saturday afternoon. There is more to that story. We're going to get to it a bit later when I talk to Mayor Daryl Steinberg. But let's start with Dr. Tekoi Porter, pastor of Genesis Church in Meadowview. And Pastor Porter, it's good to have you back on Insight. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me back. Glad to be here.
So Minneapolis is your hometown, and you and your brother helped coordinate George Floyd's service there. You have the experience here in Sacramento, there in Minneapolis. And for everyone, everywhere in between and beyond, what needs to happen to make this lasting?
Well, we need, I believe, some systematic changes to occur. I think what you're seeing from the protests, the many, many protests of not just African Americans, but then of also everyone, you know, white, black, Latino, gay, straight, and otherwise, we are all saying that systematic change needs to happen within our laws, our policies, especially in regards to policing, and then trying to fight against this, what I call, virus of racism.
Minneapolis is talking about disbanding its police department. Is that a right move?
I think it's something that we all have to look at least in the part of defunding police. How can we, take some of these monies that have over-militarized our police force and maybe put it to some type of community development area, some youth development, workers training, and things like that to raise the equity. I think that there are some communities and neighborhoods that are over-policed, and we're seeing that right now, and so we need to de-escalate that.
So, Dr. Porter, in the chant, Say Their Names, that is echoing around the world, there is almost always Stephon Clark spoken, and Ben Crump said it from the pulpit in Minneapolis on Thursday. I believe that for the duration, he was Stephon Clark's family attorney, too. So how is it for you in this time of George Floyd when you hear Stephon Clark's name?
Well, it's just an acute reminder of just how close this thing is. So I'm close to this now on two fronts, or more than two fronts, but two fronts in that the Stephon Clark incident happened just about 50 yards from my church in our neighborhood that we've been pastoring for 30 years. And then George Floyd happened in the town that I grew up in, my hometown, Minneapolis. And when I was back there, I got a chance to go back to 38th and Chicago, the intersection in which George Floyd was slain. And now it's called the George Floyd Memorial. And on my way there, I took my childhood bus route to school. Happened to be on that, on my way to that. And so it brought back many memories. And let me tell you, it's heartbreaking to be connected to these two incidents in this manner, but at least there is some attention that is being brought forth to it, and hopefully, you know, we'll see some good come out of this.
Tell me more about some of your childhood memories and the experiences that you felt were pivotal and shaping for you.
Well, I'm the son of a pastor. I'm a third generation pastor, and I guess community leadership, spiritual leadership is in my blood. It's what I do. I try to run away from that, so just trying to help others in the way, any way we can is in there. And that goes to advocacy. You know, I saw my father being an activist. He's one that was in the civil rights movement in St. Paul, Minnesota. My uncle was a pastor in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, you know, I pretty much had no choice but to follow in those footsteps. And with that, I'm just doing the same, you know, here in Sacramento, and following those footsteps and just trying to be a help to our community.
What did you experience or observe about what people said to you in Minneapolis, the atmosphere there, and what people say to you here in Sacramento, in Meadowview, and the atmosphere here? I just want to get your personal sense of that.
Well, you know, that the biggest part, what I'm hearing from both Minneapolis, here in Sacramento, is that change needs to happen. And people are ready for it. People are ready for it. People are asking us, what can we do to make a change? And I'm telling them just, you know, speak up, do something, protest, and then vote in November. You know, we have to vote, make sure that we just not concentrate on our presidential election, but we need to concentrate on our local elections as well. We need to get involved, you know, not just in the streets marching, but also in our local, with our local politicians. We need to be able to, fill out the census, you know, and so our voices can be heard so that we all can be counted, so that resources can get to the right places in our communities. So there's so much that we can do. It's just now getting off the sidelines and getting involved in the game.
I'm not sure that any of us understands what your life has been like. We talked to you last Tuesday morning, and then you joined the governor that same day for his press conference. You have attended protests and meetings. You were planning the event in Minneapolis. You went to Minneapolis. You came back to Sacramento in time for the Saturday march. Why is your voice and your spirit and your input being tapped in the many ways that it is now? What's happening in that inner circle of your world?
That's a good question. I personally do this because I have two sons and a daughter, and that's the reason why I just thrown myself into it. I have a son that's 21, son is 17. They are good boys. That one just graduated with the MBA at 21 from college, and then also have one that's on a full ride. He's a genius. He's a engineer, math and computer science major. And I, even with all the things I've done for them, I have I'm afraid for them. I think that people gravitated towards me because I just made myself available because of that, you know. And so, you know, if I'm just making myself available, I think that's the reason why I've been having these opportunities to speak up and become a voice for the voiceless and to have a greater platform. You know, I'm on my way to a press conference at the Capitol to talk about disbanding, making illegal the same chokehold that was done on George Floyd here in California. With Assemblyman Gibson. And then after that, I jump on a plane to go to Houston to help Reverend L. Sharpton again for the George Floyd final funeral services. So just making myself available.
Well, there's a lot in saying that and doing it. So thank you so much for your time. Safe travels. And I look forward to talking with you again, Pastor Porter.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for your listening.
That's Dr. Tekoi Porter, pastor of Genesis Church in Meadowview, and that, of course, being the South Sacramento community where Stephon Clark was shot by police in his grandmother's backyard in 2018. Latifa Simon has been an advocate for racial justice and civil rights throughout her career. She is president of the Akinade Foundation, and she's on the phone from San Francisco. Latifa, thanks for your time today. I'm glad you could join us.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Let's explore lifting curfew and pulling back National Guard troops, which was an important action that happened across the country. Why is that such a powerful move?
It's extremely powerful, and it's an extremely important decision that mayors and governors are making across the country. Many of these activists, they come from a long line of folks who have midwived this movement to this inflection point. So when you see government and leaders step back and sort of understand the power of this moment, of this protest moment, that really is being, it has been birthed after centuries of folks demanding that folks in power and in leadership humanize the Black body. The curfews being lifted are not enough. The pushing back of the National Guard is not enough, knowing and understanding that in this country, it has been the uprising that has always led to, it has been the suffrage that has always led to progress when it comes to tyranny. It's as American as apple pie, the organizing that is happening. So I'm really proud that good folk in leadership are seeing what this moment is. It's an American moment.
Dr. Tekoi Porter just talked about the shift, about this sleeper hold and the chokehold methods. The shift right now is happening. Some places have immediately ended it or suspended it. Are more videos surfacing now? Do you think there's a much more vivid awareness of this type of police practice? And would the change be happening so swift if there wasn't so much video?
Of course. I mean, you know, the governor of the great state of California, Gavin Newsom, just said on Friday that not only must California stop that particular means of restraint, but that is just the very beginning of the conversation. Black men in this country, they know very well, good and well, what happens when you're thrown across a car, if you've committed an infraction or not, or you're put on the ground with a knee in your back. Black women know it because we've seen it on our streets, with our partners, with our brothers. And so thank God we are unearthing what we, many of us, have always known, who have been activists, organizers, folks who are pushing towards this moment, that there are some who have decided to use their power and control to inflict their racism on communities of color. So absolutely, video, it holds a mirror to this nation. And I'm so happy to be in this position. The governor has asked me to advise him with retired officer Ron Davis on police reform moving forward. And this is the moment where we ask ourselves, reform is not enough. A complete transformation and an examination of what public safety and enforcement, what it looks like, how it must move, it's now, it's urgent.
When you joined the governor at his press conference last week, you talked about bending the arc to justice, and this was a paraphrase of Dr. Martin Luther King's words. And it's interesting how these two pivotal movements of our time, the COVID-19 response, gave us flatten the curve. That was our action to take. And as I heard you say, bend the arc to justice, I thought, well, there's the other phrase for action of our time.
Yeah.
Tell me about the vividness of those words to you.
Well, to me, you know, I spent almost two decades literally in the streets with the folks that I love so much, who are now in deep leadership, who are seizing this moment to move past reform towards transformation. And I'm so inspired by them. But my role in government, both as a local elected, I talk to my chief every single day. I'm the president of the BART board. And Barrier Rapid Transit, I don't know if you remember, you know, we've gone through 10 years of reform since the murder of Oscar Grant.
Right.
And Chief Alvarez is a young man who's taken on the leadership around the same time I took on leadership at BART. And he has made it a point this year, we spoke in January, to ensure that the reforms are not just reforms, that they're actionable values. And I think that we, not only is it okay to speak the words, but it's to live the value. And so when you have the largest codified protest for civil rights and human rights in American history happening in 1 week, there is no turning back. And for folks to be talking about the sanctity of life and Black life and deeply understanding how the history of this country must be addressed and reconciled and transformed, there's an opportunity to swiftly bend that arc, not hastily bend that arc, but to make sure that we're living the words and the promise of King, of Malcolm X, of all of the folks who have exposed. Malcolm X, I believe, said, "It's not a chip on my shoulder, it's your foot in my neck." So this movement isn't a movement of last week, of 2 weeks ago. George Floyd sparked the radical imagination, and again, decades and centuries of long fear and frustration, and now electeds and leaders are acting. There's no going back.
Ryan Coogler is a hometown son over here in Sacramento, the director of Fruitvale Station, which told that story of Oscar Grant. So I'll again mention that to everybody in this time when everyone's watching a lot of movies at home. So Fruitvale Station is one to see. One more question. Right now, this conversation about defunding or disbanding police departments. Latifah, do you think something like that is feasible in San Francisco?
What's really important, people mention that phrase. I direct them to, again, go back to the ground. Patrice Cullors, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, she's been very clear. The defunding police lexicon is an opportunity for us to think about how we do things differently in law enforcement. It is making sure that we're thinking about homeless and mental health crises and poverty. How do we line item audit our police budgets and defund spaces and places where law enforcement folks with billy clubs and guns shouldn't be? How do we get nurses in schools instead of cops? These organizers and activists, not only are they policy wonks, not only are they some of the best problem solvers, they're not naive. They understand the large rallying cry of defunding police really means to study, to act, and to move. And it is possible. It is possible in Oakland. The Black Organizing Project is asking the school board to get police out of schools immediately and replace with nurses and well-paid teachers and artists and music. That doesn't mean our communities don't need good law enforcement. That doesn't mean that communities are asking for a complete wiping out of accountability. What these young people are asking for is a new radical imagination and practice of how safety is litigated in our communities. And it is doable. It is doable. And it is a sweeping call to action for leaders, for mayors and police chiefs to begin very, very clearly thinking about not only how change happens, but how trust is restored and how order, meaning on both sides, is restored. And that answer is going to come from the people.
Latifah, thank you so much for your time today on Insight. I'm really glad that you were able to join us.
Thank you so much. And thank you for what you're doing.
Be safe.
All right. All power to the people.
Take care. Thank you, Latifah. Latifah Simon is president of the Akonadi Foundation. She's a civil rights advocate based in San Francisco, which, as you know, has joined cities around the world in experiencing peaceful protests over the weekend. In Sacramento, a very powerful weekend actually began with as many as 2,000, by some estimates, people who laid down on the ground in the mayor's neighborhood. So rather than a sit-in, this was called a die-in. Monday's Mayor's Chat is with Daryl Steinberg. And Mr. Mayor, this is a Monday that has made history. So let's start with that experience in your neighborhood and what difference that made to you.
Well, thank you, Beth. It was a powerful, impactful experience for me personally and for our entire Sacramento community. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it sent the message in a very, very profound way. And I would call it one of the more impactful evenings of my entire career, even though I wasn't physically present because the organizers did not want me there. They did not want it to be about me, even if it was directed at me. And I watched it. And I took it in, and I know my obligation is to think deeper and to act more boldly. And then Saturday, the same experience with 15,000 or so Sacramentans, another beautiful demonstration of the power of the people. And I said what I will say to you, that words do matter, but only actions heal. And I know that we and I will be rightfully judged on not what we have done, though we can point to a lot that we have done, but in fact what we do.
Did the Friday night event contribute to a specific decision that you were making or made, and in what way?
Well, the curfew issue certainly, and this National Guard issue, which was always a decision made reluctantly after the looting of the previous Saturday and Sunday evenings. I knew Friday night, based upon what occurred and just how powerful it was, that I did not want to wait through the weekend, but that Saturday morning, it was appropriate, the absolute right time to say, all right, the end of that.
Minneapolis, as you know, seems to have enough votes on its council right now to override the mayor in this effort to disband the Minneapolis Police Department. Could something like that be a possibility for Sacramento? How far might you and council members be willing to go?
No, I don't want to even think in those terms about disbanding the police department. I understand the sentiment, I understand the impetus, I understand the defund movement, but maybe there is a bold but more healing conversation to be had that is actually part of the message of the people who are calling for dismantling and defunding. And that is a question that the community asks, but frankly, the police department and the officers often ask as well. Why is it that we put police officers consistently in difficult situations that have nothing to do with enforcing the law? I mean, you know my history with mental health and my work in that regard. That is the perfect example. Why is it when a family is in crisis or an individual family member is in crisis, is the only recourse in society for the family to call 911 and to have the police respond? We put our officers in situations that they are frankly not adequately trained for, that put them in dangerous positions, and because they have weapons, put other people in dangerous situations. And so I would approach this whole conversation maybe from a more positive perspective, but I think from the same bold perspective. What if we were to say that we are going to triage our calls to 911, or not even use 911 for many situations anymore, and not dispatch police officers to everything imaginable under the sun? Instead, we actually had, for example, with the mental health issues, we actually had trained intervention workers, social workers, people who could come out and intervene in the myriad of situations that police officers currently confront. That's the debate and the question that needs to be had there. And does that then result in money flowing towards alternative ways to address very difficult situations in community? It could, but we ought not to start with the money conversation. That's just too easy, right? Take the money. The real conversation is, what are we asking them to do? And is it fair to them? Is it fair to the community? And I will tell you right now, I don't believe that it is. Law enforcement should enforce the law when there have been actual crimes, not be engaged in every risky interaction that actually has nothing to do with enforcing crime. That's our failure. That's society's failure around mental health, as again, the prime example. That's the debate I want to have in this community.
I want to get back to the mental health question in a moment, but I'm just hearing you talk about what you're calling a bold idea for the first time. So I'm thinking of a scenario of a domestic violence situation where a woman needs to call 911. She needs help. And the minutes are precious. The seconds are precious. And maybe it is a situation of life or death for her. Are you suggesting in a case like that, that rather than police responding, it would be domestic violence experts or a triage team? And I don't know if that's the kind of situation you imagine.
No, that isn't probably not the situation I'm speaking about, because if a woman is being beaten, that's a crime. And so when she calls or someone calls in the household on her behalf, it's appropriate for the police to respond because that's a crime in progress. But that isn't the situation we often find with people, whether they be on street corners, obviously in psychiatric distress, whether it's the family member who calls because their loved one is yelling and shouting or speaking in a delusional way. I mean, these things happen thousands of times a year, and it's a huge part of the police call volume. And mental health is not the only situation, but to me, it is the most poignant. But I would distinguish it from domestic violence because that is a crime and a crime in progress.
All right. We're limited here by how much time you and I can kind of walk through the weeds on this. So let me shift just a little bit and say, is the city of Sacramento specifically making mental health resources available to African-American citizens who might need them during what is right now a tremendously traumatic time?
We did put forward some mental health resources as our COVID response with our federal stimulus dollars, but it's clear to me that we need to do much more and continue to partner with the county, because this is no excuse in any way, but it is the county that runs the health and human services systems and run the mental health dollars. The initiative that I did, Prop 63 in 2004, the millionaire's tax, all the money runs through the county. So we need their partnership here on this. But I tell you, I would like to provoke a debate and a conversation around, start with the 911 triage. Why is it automatic that every time someone calls 911, even for an issue that does not involve the threat to life or a criminal activity, Do the police and, or in many instances, of course, the fire department respond at huge expense to the taxpayers, and frankly, putting them in positions that are often unsafe and unfair? You call law enforcement, enforce the law. So I might start right with that triage question, and that's a state law question, but it can also be a local question, because our default has been and continues to be police, first responders for everything. Unfair to them, risky to them, and risky to the public. That's how you have the money conversation here in a way that actually I hope would have the potential to bring people together and get something done.
Well, you just added the 911 system into a number of very dramatic, provocative conversations that are happening across the country. And I think this topic is one you and I will be talking about again very soon in the future.
Much more to cover, Beth. Much more. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Sacramento's Mayor Daryl Steinberg. We're going to take a short break. In a moment, we're going to shift a bit to California's budget deadline. Cap Radio's Nicole Nixon will talk with me about, among other things, the one item that the governor says he is not going to budge on. Then we will finish with the uplift and give you some arts ideas for the kids that are going to be home maybe much more than they usually have been over summertime. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.